As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of One of These Years. I'm, of course, Nick Baumgartner, joined by Colton Pouncey. Don't really have a fancy intro, Colton. That was an ass-kicking by the Lions on Sunday. 40-14. I don't know what the timeline is on, like, what the most lopsided, whatever, but that was as impressive a Lions win, regardless of opponent, probably since Caldwell, I'd say, right?
Yep.
I guess first and foremost, how are we doing? And welcome back to the show here this week.
Yeah, doing well. I think I looked it up after the game. That was the, I think in the last 10 seasons, they've only had three games where they've outscored an opponent by more points. You know, but, so that's,
yeah.
Or, you know, the margin of victory.
Pretty good.
So that's saying a lot, man. And that was by far like the cleanest game of the Campbell era. Like there's really no sweating it at any point in that game. And that's one of those comfortable wins where at first we talked about the close wins. Can you overcome those, you know, late game situations? This one, they didn't really need to, you know, they won by 26 points. It was never really in danger. And I'm sure the fans left happy and comfortable after that one.
You'd said at one point in the middle, something that I was actually feeling the same way. You were like, this is boring. And it was, they were up. they were up. I don't know what it was, but they were clearly in front. They were in front the whole way. And it was by a couple scores, you know, and it was like, and they were just firmly in control and they weren't really doing anything that we hadn't seen before. And you'd said that. I was like, you know, you're right. This is boring. And that's good. I was like, that's a good thing for a change for them. It's like the first time they've had a boring win. It felt like watching. Yeah, you're right. It felt like watching like a college game. Like, you know what I mean? Where you'd see a team that was just like getting physically dominated. The opposite of some games we'd see where the Lions had been hapless or what have you. And that's a Jacksonville team that's really talented, but also really young. And, you know, you understand that sort of thing. But it's just like, yeah, that is different. And to me, that was why I circled that game. That was why when we talked last week, you know, I said, I want to see how they respond in this game right here, because they are the Jaguars. They're a little bit older, right? They're a little bit in the right spots. They actually might be a younger team than Jacksonville. I'm not sure. But they're a little bit older in the right spots. And I thought they're a little bit better. And, but I want to see it. And, they're not just a little bit better. I thought they're a lot bit better. And that's why, you know, I wrote this week and we talked comfortable saying it. You know, like they've turned a corner here. This is not the same group that we saw at the end of last year or the middle of last year or even the start of this year. This is a different team. And I don't know what all that means. I don't know what that means going forward. And it might be too late, you know, this year for it to mean anything. But you can tell, right, Colton? I mean, you're there every day. You can sense from these guys. I was standing over there next to Hutchinson and someone asked him about, does this feel like, because they asked him about the Michigan Big Ten game. And then somebody's like, well, speaking of that, does this feel like it felt when you were, you know, like AG talked about, you wake up in the morning and you're ready to win a game. And he was like, that, yes. He's like, this is what this is starting to feel like again. And it's really cool because I did not expect this. So, I mean, yeah, I would ask you, you know, your sort of reaction to a similar, you know, similar take here, because this does feel like a team that's growing and it's kind of hard to ignore at this point.
It definitely does. And I'll say one example of that was Wednesday's availability. That was the most packed I've seen the Lions media room and since training camp the first day, like when Hard Knocks was there. Like
you didn't have a seat?
Whoa. I was like, my seat got jacked. I got to move around. But, you know, I was asking some people about that. And they're just like, I mean, yeah, I can't remember the last time it was this packed in like December.
Wow. Yes, but, I mean, good
that
point. Just,
that's a product of what they're doing and the games that they're winning. And you may look at the opponents and say, oh, the Jaguars, the Bears, the Packers, it's not impressive. But if they had lost those games, you would still be saying, oh, same old Lions. So, absolutely. You know, I think that's progress. I think that's a step in the right direction. And, I mean, when we see a team, and again, we talked about this last week, a team that was on paper kind of even with the Jaguars. Campbell said that himself. In a lot of ways, they're kind of like us. He said that even after the game.
Yep.
When you see that big of a discrepancy in play, you know, I think they only had maybe one penalty that entire game, the Lions. Zero turnovers. Defense only gave up 14 points. The offense scored on every meaningful possession except for Nate Sudfeld coming in at the end taking a knee.
You know, right. Like that's which is what you want. Clean game.
I don't like that to me is like, okay, you have a team that's even with you and you go out and you dominate it. Like that is, I was kind of curious to see what they would do after the Bills game. We've seen them, you know, not be able to get over the top against some of these teams. So I was curious to see, okay, you're playing a team that's kind of on your level. What do you do with that?
Yeah.
And I know that the NFL, we talked about this, the NFL is, has, every team has talent, so any team can lose, right? But I was curious. I was like, if the Lions go out there and they dominate, I think that's a, that's a sign. And they did that. And they won 40-14. And
yeah,
I mean, that was really impressive outing and probably one of the best games of Campbell's era for sure.
Being the more mature young team, I guess, right? Because like that's what it had come down to. Because I mean, when I look back at it, and this is the case for a couple of Lions games too, I don't think Jacksonville, I would say, played bad. Like they didn't play good. But I don't think they played like that wasn't their worst game. They just got beat by a team that was playing well and didn't play poorly on their own. Yeah. And we've seen this Lions group, Campbell's Lions group, go through that exact thing Jacksonville just went through even this year. People have, you know, I went back this week and did a lot of, I looked at several games from, you know, the losing streak and then, you know, looked at stuff since in the last couple. And a lot of people have pointed to that New England game as like one that they just cannot explain away. What the hell happened there? Why was that such a mess, right? And there's a lot of reasons for that. But like, more than anything else, it was just like, I don't think that the Lions that day played poorly. They just made a couple like really bad errors at really bad times. And a not bad team took advantage and blew them out. And like, that's what they're now doing. And it's like, that to me is a graduation. Like you talked, Deuce talked about that at the beginning of the year. Everybody has to graduate every year, right? That to me is a graduation from like, bottom quarter to like now you're flirting in the middle like that. That's what they feel like they're back to flirting in the middle, because when you talked about the game being boring, it reminded me of like you're 100% right, because we have seen this offense operate like this for long stretches of games almost every week all year. But most weeks there'd be something that they would do that, you know, would screw them or whatever, or the defense would not have their whatever in time. This was the first time that it all came together and you were like, okay, this is what they can do when they're clean. And that is pretty good. That's playoff level football. You'd have to be blind or wanting to see something different to say anything otherwise. Right. I understand the fans, you know, and I got a lot of that from this week. I even saw my dad, Colton, yesterday, and he was like, I don't know about all this. Right. And I'm like, I get it. I 100% get it, because you've seen stuff that you can't unsee. But when I say that I feel like this is different, that's why. Because it's a different staff, and I just don't think it's the same. I don't think we've really seen a staff like this in my lifetime coaching the Lions. It's a very different staff. And whether or not that means they will be a, you know, the answer to everyone's problems, I don't know. But I think it's time people start acknowledging, right? It's a different group, and Campbell's a pretty good coach. I think he's got potential to be a pretty good coach, I think we'll say, right? I think that's what we can say at this point.
Absolutely, I think that's fair. And it's funny, because like when you're watching that game, the first half, you're like, wow, that was a pretty impressive first half. I got some tweets like, all right, so what's going to happen in the second half? Like, what, when is
the team going? Right. Well, okay, here we go.
The other
right?
team's away. Something's going to happen here. Like, I'm just waiting for the inevitable other shoe to drop. And it never happened. Like,
it didn't.
It didn't. For a change. Like, it didn't come close. That one was start to finish, like wire to wire, a win, a dominant win. And Campbell, I think he said on Wednesday, we needed that losing streak to get to where we are now.
100%. Yeah.
You know, I think it allowed a lot of people to look at themselves in the mirror and say, you know, we've been talking this talk, but it's time to back it up. If we really think that we are ready to take a, you know, turn the corner, take the next step, whatever you want to call it, you got to go out and do it. You know, they were competitive against some really good teams to start the season, but they had nothing to show for it. Right. So I think they kind of realized we just got to win some of these games. That's the only way we'll get the respect. You know, Taylor Decker talking about, you know, even after the Thanksgiving loss, we're going to go out and we're going to earn that respect. This is not the same effing old Lions anymore.
Right.
So for him to kind of, you know, the Campbell to say that, I think that kind of shows you where they're at now. Because I don't think he would say, he would have said that a few weeks ago. Like, yeah, this losing streak is a good thing for us. You can't say that in the middle of it. But he saw
100%. Yeah.
Greater things down the road. He saw the way that his team was competing in these games. And he thought it was only a matter of time before they pulled some of these out. And now they've won four of their last five. They're 5-7. They went from the number one draft pick to now 15th. You know, that's that's pretty good.
Pretty good.
I mean, I think you still got the Rams pick up there, so that's pretty good. And, you know, I think they like the way they're playing. And right now I feel like they think they can beat any team in the league at this point. I mean, the last five games are not hard. And
no! You know, yeah, that's a great point.
It's not really like, oh, I should be scared of this game. You know, like the Vikings, they almost beat them in the first – they probably should have beat them the first time around. So – they've got a schedule that allows them to kind of set up for a strong finish here. And if that happens, they'll enter 2023 with some serious momentum.
It's interesting. You know, we talk about growth and across the board, and you mentioned some things there that reminded me about Campbell's growth and just the point right there that you made about not freaking out and like acting like y'all need to shut up when it was 1-5 or 6 or whatever it was. Yep. Because, you know, I've been watching football a long time. And context, I don't think there's another sport in our country where context is more important and more ignored than NFL football, like at a granular level, right? To a point where coaches know it now. You can even, you know, when you hear the whole thing about like, you know, we're hurt, you know, this guy's hurt. Well, what are you going to do about it? Nobody cares. Right. And they say that all the time. Right. And people are like, well, that's pretty callous. I'm like, well, it's true. Nobody cares. Yeah. No one gives a shit what we're going through on a day-to-day basis. They just expect us to come out there on Sunday and get it done, okay? So you have to, as a coach, I think, grow to that level. And you could see it with Campbell even. Like, last year, we would hear him talk week to week about, like, there'd be manic moments where he'd be talking about, like, every little thing that was going through his mind and this, that, and the other. And then as time goes on, you can sort of see that, like, he's like, you guys, these people don't care about any of this. They don't care that we have to, that our plight is what it is. They just want to see what we do out there. And I think that even he has grown. And we've talked about that, I know, a little bit. But, I mean, you're there every day. I mean, I want to ask you, the growth that you've seen from Dan Campbell in 3 months, whatever it's been, to me, I think this has been as important for Dan Campbell, the head coach, as any other person probably in the entire building.
Yeah, he looks like a different dude, even from midseason 100%. To where they are now. His body language is better. And, you know, some of that comes with wins. But,
yeah,
you know, he even during that losing streak, it was after the Patriots game, after the Cowboys game, he was saying, I just feel like we're close. You know, like, I just feel like if we get some of our horses back, we stay consistent, we do what we do. Like, we'll be all right. And at that point, a lot of people were just rolling their eyes and, you know, writing him off already and ready to fire him like halfway through the second season. But when he was saying that, I will say the body language wasn't exactly there. It was almost like he was trying to, like, convince himself. And, you know, from that point to where he is now, these wins have offered some validation for him. Where I feel like even he's saying, okay, I'm not as crazy as I thought. You know,
exactly,
like,
man.
What I'm seeing on paper and in my head is finally translating to the field. Like, this is working. And I think that's so important for his growth as a second-year head coach and where he's at with his franchise. And just to see the way that the team is playing and they're kind of taking after him and taking on his identity in a lot of ways. Yeah. And everything that he said at his intro presser, you know, we're going to be a tough out. We're going to bite you on the kneecap comment.
We're going to be a tough out.
Get down. We're going to bite you on come back up. Like, They are a tough out for any team in this league. Mm-hmm. The Eagles can say the same thing. The Vikings can say that.
Seahawks.
The Cowboys. The Seahawks. Yeah. Like, they play these games so competitively, so tough. And they're not there talent-wise yet, but I think he sees where this thing is going. And that's why on Wednesday and even Monday, I thought this was his best week as a head coach in terms of the media, his availability. He looks so confident up there. He looks like he's cracking jokes. He's like, yeah, I know I was fired at midseason, but here we are now. Yeah. I'm just like, good for you.
And man. I'm not. Yeah.
Right. There you go. I mean, you can do that when you want 4 out of 5 and your team is playing the way it is. You know?
Right.
And I think that's good. I think that's going to rub off on the players too when they hear that stuff. Because, it's validation for what he's done, what they're doing, and where they're going. And so I look at Dan Campbell right now. He's just really kind of finding himself as a head coach, I think.
Yeah, great point.
Still not always perfect, but, you know, he's getting there. And as the roster and the talent improves, I think he's going to have more to work with. And you can see where this thing is going. There's a plan here in place.
The ultimate difference, I guess, in whether or not a promising or encouraging young coach turns into somebody that is sustainable is what you do after this point, I guess. But it is still really cool and to see. And Campbell, I guess it's interesting because everything is on the sleeve with that guy. He can't hide it if he wanted to, right? So you see these processes play out in real time that I think all coaches probably go through, but you just nailed it where you were like, there's not a head coach in the league at some level or a coach in general who's had an assignment that's been greater than just like your position, where you're responsible for coming up with ideas and decisions. And at some point you feel like you're nuts. And then you see that like, maybe I'm not fucking nuts. Maybe this actually works and maybe you can all go to hell. And then everything from there takes off. For some guys that happens like right away. Jim Harbaugh, I don't think ever doubted himself a minute in his life, but like other coaches out there, it takes a little longer. And I think that Dan is now to the point where it's like, he's like, I'm not nuts. I know football. You know, I'm not going to doubt what we're doing anymore. Even if he did or didn't, I don't know. But you're 100% right on that. Like, there's no doubt anymore. And I don't know that there was. I think they actually did a pretty good job there of not looking like they were, you know, the pleasant firing. Could probably be construed that way if they didn't maybe have some conversations, which they probably did.
Sure.
But I didn't see a lot of panic, man. I saw, like Campbell said the other day to you guys, I saw a consistent person. I saw the same guy. You know, he was fighting it. And there were some weeks where it was harder than others, but I saw the same guy. And that's what a head coach is supposed to do day to day, week to week.
He weathered the storm. Like, that's probably the best way to put it.
100%. Like, yep.
Back then, he was getting questions about his job security. Sheila came out and talked, and that was a whole thing.
Can Brad fire you?
Yeah.
Remember that one?
All of that. So I'm sure that's tough, and I'm sure he said, look, I don't read everything, but I see some things.
You know? Yeah, he sees all that. Yep.
Yeah, and it's like, I'm sure he was dealing with that, but again, like, other than some body language stuff and maybe, like, just trying to will that into existence, which I think was the right move, you know, his message to his players internally never changed, and he was that same guy, and he felt that was important because he's been around other coaches that have, you know, had some tough times and turned things around or whatever because – Parcells, Sean Payton, he's been around some good coaches, man. Like, this guy has been in this game for a long time. He's kind of seen it all. So his best approach was, I'm going to be myself. I'm going to keep preaching what I've been preaching. I don't think that we've been, you know, I don't think the games that we've been playing, we're so out of it that we should scrap everything. We're close.
Nope.
So let's continue what we're doing, and these wins will come, and we'll be confident in that. And that's exactly what happened. And now he can go up there and he can kind of show some confidence and just say, look, every time someone asks him, and it feels like every press conference now, like, people are trying to figure out, like, what's different? Like, what's been the big change for this turnaround? He's like, I mean, honestly, nothing. Like, it's just, we're winning.
They're
these games.
Playing That's the same stuff. Yep.
They are. It's not scheme. It's not like they changed their whole defense or their entire offense. Like, they got a little healthier. They got some dudes back and they kept playing their style of football. And they knew eventually that would lead to some wins. So,
sign of a bad coach is a guy or gal who will not change when things are clearly going wrong. And the sign of a good coach is someone who won't change when things are clearly going right, even if the results aren't what they're supposed to be. And that is true coaching to me. Like, that's a sign. That's why I like his chances. I've liked Dan Campbell's chances from the start because I think that he gets it. I think that is, you know, all the flaws of somebody like a Parcells over the years, and he's not a perfect coach, but like the reason why that that worked like it did when you talked to all the people that played for him, that which includes, you know, AG and Campbell and a lot of these guys, is like he was the same guy every single day. Every day, all year. It never changed. It never turned off. It never went away. Like, it was always the same. You just have to live it. You have to, and that means that that just has to be who you are. That means that, like, and when you, Bill Parcells is a guy that used to, you know, sit in the office 20 hours a day and have meetings with beat writers in the middle of the night, smoking cigarettes with them because he never left the building. He was just there all day. It was football. I feel like that's, Dan Campbell is like a natural football coach who has to learn how to be a manager of a game. And I think that that's where they're at still. And that ultimately will be what determines his success in this league, because there's a lot of really good football coaches that have come through the league that have just gotten their ass kicked and they get crapped out and they end up being really good coaches for a long time somewhere else. Like, and that's, he'll be in the NFL for as long as he wants to be. We know that. You and I know that. Yeah. But the general, how you're going to succeed now, it depends on, can you grow into those decision-making moments week to week? And I feel like we're seeing some of that, but it's still, that is something where I feel like now the test really ramps up, because now, like we've talked, we're going to talk about a minute here, they're going to play a real game here against a real team. And it actually doesn't, it's not irrelevant. It matters. There's no steps back that you can't take now. That was something else I want to talk to you about. At this point, like, we can't see a reversal here. You can see a hiccup. But we cannot see, like you just mentioned, the schedule is not impossible. It's not ridiculous. There should be a strong finish to this season. And anything you know, less than would be disappointing, I think, at this point.
It would. I actually wrote in my game story from Sunday, like, imagine if the Lions lost that game to the Jaguars. So you have this three-game winning streak.
What would that feel like? Exactly.
Then you lose to the Bills on some late-game management issues.
People know that.
Then you come back the next week and you lose to a Jaguars team that you probably should have beat. Mm-hmm. And then you got the Vikings at home, a 10-2 team that's trying to lock down the division. If you lose that one, you go from three wins in a row to three losses in a row. And that's like, you can't have this up and down at this point. So that's why I thought that win was so important. And now to come back with this Vikings game, like, talk about a missed opportunity with the Bills game. This is huge. Like, and Dan is not shying away from that. He said on Monday, like, you know, no, this is a big game. Like, we feel it. It almost feels like a playoff game in some ways.
Right, it's not for the Lions. Yeah, I mean, right.
I still don't think they're going to be making a playoff push down the stretch, but it has that sort of environment. I think Ford Field's going to be rocking on Sunday just because it's a division rival, a 10-2 team. You have a chance to kind of really make a statement with a win like this, and you know, you get to 6-7 beating that team. Like, that's, man.
Right.
You got
that's what I'm saying.
Winnable, like, teams.
Yeah. When we're talking about, This is what it is, and that's why I like what I like and I don't like, because Campbell has never, he's never not tried. I mean, if he does any pandering, it's to the local people, right? He doesn't pander to the national people. If he does any pandering, it's the people here, because he understands what they've been through. Like, hey, a game in December at your building against a divisional team that's not totally mathematical irrelevant. It's not mathematically irrelevant, right? That's not nothing. That's something. That, for where they were, oh my God. Like, Patricia was a disaster every day. Yeah. We've been over this. Like, it's been since 2017, since they have played in a game in December. That was Stafford's entire thing, right? Like, just get me to a situation where I'm playing in a game in December that's not, like, pointless. That's not, that I'm not just, like, that's not just a health risk to me. Like, for suiting up. Because we used to ask him, like, Matthew, you were hurt today. Why did you play? And he's like, because I'm an NFL quarterback and that's my job. Like, to be in a game that's not meaningless, and to embrace that and not, like, I hate to bring up Patricia again, but if that had happened there, he'd be like, well, it's just another game. We're not going to talk about any other, you know. No, this is not just another game. Colton? This is why guys like me get into coaching, for God's sake. Like, that's what you want to hear, right?
Yes.
Yes.
I want a coach that's going to go out there and make it, blow it up. If you lose, whatever.
Yes,
but, like,
whatever.
I want you to make it a big deal. I want you to realize.
This is the NFL, man.
And I know that people say, oh, they're 5-7. I don't care. It's meaningful football in December. Like, how many times can you say that's happened the last 5-10 years? You know? So that to me is what you want to hear from head coach like Dan Campbell. He said this place can be special, but it's up to us to make it that way. It's up to us to keep winning. And he understands that. And, you know, I thought that was interesting for him to say. You know, he understands that it's on the team. The fans are going to come. If you show that you can be competitive in these games, you show that you can win them, the fans will be there. That's not the issue. Right. It's on you to kind of create that environment. And this game will have it for sure. Like, this might be – where do you think this game will rank in terms of the atmosphere that we see?
This would be season? Like the opener, I think.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
You know, or like Thanksgiving was rocking, I'm sure, too. But like the opener is that one every year that you're like – okay, the hope's going to be there. You know, even there, if it's not, you got a problem, right? Like, yeah. That's kind of the barometer for Lions fans. And this year, the hope was, people remember that were, especially people, a lot of them listen to this show, they were at that game. When that ball kicked off, the opening, you know, in that first drive, the defense was out there, it was rocking. That's what I would expect this to be. And I think that's why Detroit fans, they just want that opportunity because everybody always gets surprised. They always get surprised. Oh my God, it's really loud in here. Holy shit. Like, this place can really get going, you know? And it's like, well, yes, this place. Yeah, that was Colton. And now you're not going to be surprised. But like, people, you know, yeah. I mean, if you give them a chance to stand up and yell for you, they'll do it, you know? But you have to give them a chance. And that's why when Campbell says that, you know, that's cool. And they're going to get a good crowd. I expect that will happen. It'll be a good atmosphere. And like you said, and we'll talk about that here in a second on the other side of the break. You know, they fought every team they've played. This is a 10-2 team that they had on the ropes in Minneapolis. So a game they can win, a game that there's no reason to think that they can't. So, you know, we'll break it down here in a second. But any other thoughts, Colton, on the Jags game before we move on? I know we can talk about them on the other side of the break here. Amon-Ra's play continues to rocket up the charts. I don't know what is actual, but some of these stats that he's piling up continue to be crazy.
Yeah, we'll pull some of these out, but I mean, he's probably the MVP of this team right now.
That's a good point.
The way he's playing is really, you know, he's helped Goff so much in a lot of ways. They're getting contributions from so many players, like James Houston continues to do his thing.
Oh, yeah.
So I just thought it was a good game for a lot of these dudes on this team. And in the locker room, they were kind of like, yeah, this is what we expected.
they weren't bumping the – I mean, I don't even think music was playing when I walked in there, actually. It was just
probably
like –
probably not, yeah.
They
had just gone about it. This
they
point,
were like, having yeah, a time, yeah.
For sure.
Awesome. Okay, we'll take a break here quick and come back on the other side and we'll talk Lions-Vikings.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
All right, everybody, we're back. Break down some Lions-Vikings here in a not meaningless game for a change in December. I don't know if there'll be snow, but either way, Lions-Vikings. Week 3 game, Colton, was an interesting one. You were there. I actually went back and watched all of it this week. The Lions had the game like where they wanted it twice. It was 14-0, and then I think they were up again maybe 10 or maybe 14. But I also didn't think they played great in that game either. I don't think it was the best they've played. Interesting game here. The Vikings are a good team. They've obviously, they're 10 and 10, they've won these games, but this is not a good division, and I think that's part of the reason why they are where they are. Initial thoughts from you on this one as you see it.
Yeah, I mean, the Vikings have proven to be a good team. When you go, solid team. When you go 10 and 2, like, you're a good team. But they have gotten away with a lot of these close wins, and it does feel like they're almost due in a way. Like, I said the same thing after the Giants game. That didn't feel sustainable. Not that the Vikings aren't a good team. It's just like, you're due for a close loss at some point, right? Like, they've won however many games in a row now. And the Lions are actually favored in this game, Nick. I don't know if you
know. I know.
2.5-point favorites over a 10-2 team. where are we? What are we doing
right
now?
What the hell?
But I think that also speaks to, like, how well the Lions are playing. They're at home, so that probably factors into that a little bit. But I think it'll be another competitive game. You know, the Lions probably should have won the first time around. Dan Campbell said, I think Wednesday, that that decision to kick the field goal, you know, burns at him every single day and will continue for the rest of his life until he dies, I think is what he said.
I mean, so, yeah, it should probably.
That's a decision that continues to haunt him. Yeah. It's funny, though, because he said that, and then he's like, I try not to dwell on it too much. And then he got, like, 4 more questions about it after that. And he's like, guys, what did I just say? I'm not trying to dwell on it. It was hilarious. Yeah. I was dying.
What did I just say? I just stayed up last night till 5 in the morning thinking about it.
It's like, thanks for reminding me, guys.
Right, yeah.
But that's a game that, you know, there's a lot of talk after that one. Like, people were ready to fire Campbell one. And that was, what, week 3?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. Yeah. So, we've come a long way since then.
A lot has changed, right?
A lot has changed.
I think that's what I would say, like, and that's the interesting thing. And I want to see how this goes for the Lions, because that game defensively, they were still having all sorts of problems. And the health of the team was not, they're healthier today, I believe it or not, than they were in week 3. But, you know, they were still playing Amani at that time. He was still starting at corner, and Jerry Jacobs
that was
wasn't.
Game Tracy went down too.
And Tracy got hurt in that game. He only played, look, I got it here, 8 snaps. So so now you're a sudden change losing him. That's a huge deal. You don't know what to do. Like, so that's a deal. And then you're also still struggling with Amani. The biggest thing, though, I think, you know, those things have changed. The secondary is in such great shape in terms of health and confidence and all that. But the biggest difference in this game, I think, is the Lions in that game got carved up front whenever Minnesota wanted to do it, because they were still playing that attacking, you know, we're either slanting hard left or we're slanting hard right up front on every snap, because he's bringing pressure or he's doing this and he's trying to create, you know, these lanes for guys. And they were just getting, you know, inside outside zone to death. It was just Dalvin Cook this way and he'd make a cut, because if you're slanting and he's just waving against you, it's all, you know, it's easy money. They've changed. The Lions have changed the way they play defense. I wrote about it a little bit this week. It's not every snap. It's not every whatever. They still play a lot of single high. They still play a lot of man. And, you know, Glenn still blitzes. It's not that they don't. I was more than I think I probably thought, frankly, and, you know, give him credit for that. I don't think he totally backed off from some of the stuff that I thought he would have to back off on. However, they did smartly change the way that they have asked those interior dudes to play blocks. And it's working, because you forget how athletic Aleem McNeil is. You forget that you don't need him to just... He can put his hands under a dude's chest and just root him out of there. But he can also one arm and then play it, you know, play a block while he's playing the ball. And so they're playing a little bit more... I don't know if I would call it gap and a half, but I mean, I think it's a little bit more of the make a read, then play the block, and then play the ball, and it's slowing everything down. You're seeing guys get downhill a little easier. I think if the Lions in this game can fit the run a little better and take away that easy, like, because that's what the Vikings do to you. They just bleed you with those little zone plays, and then Cousins, who isn't what we would call a great quarterback in the NFL, just makes pedestrian solid throws off play action, and you know, and they soundly beat you. If the Lions in this game can play solid run defense better, because we've seen better run defense, this becomes, I can understand why maybe they're favorite at home, right? And you just said it, Vikings are maybe due for a loss in a close game. Like, there's a lot of changes the Lions have made as a team defensively that I'm curious to see how that plays out, especially, and also personnel. Jerry didn't play in this game. Jeff's grown as a player, right? I mean, a lot has changed.
Yeah, I agree. I'm thinking back to that game, and I just remember, yeah, Cook just doing whatever he wanted. They averaged 5 yards a carry in that game. So
you saw it,
too. A lot of it was literally just like, all right, do your thing, run here, run there. Like, you have it against this defense. And so I'm thinking a guy like Josh Pascal, who can help you in a lot of ways. He can funnel things back inside for some of these other dudes to make plays. We've seen Aleem McNeil take these steps, like you just mentioned. Some of the defensive changes up front. But also, you know, when they lost Tracy in that game, and they put Juju Hughes in at that time. And
yes,
that was probably, you know, I think Kirby wasn't ready
in the moment. Yep. What do you do?
They just had to make who's your most game ready guy at that point is Juju. We haven't seen much of him since, but that's because Kirby's taken the step and he's kind of taken that position and has run with it. And now, you know, that last touchdown that they gave up, like that, it seemed like there was a miscommunication there and some issues in the back half. Like, they seem to have sorted a lot of those issues out. Like, Aaron Glenn and Campbell both say, like, the communication on the back end and secondary is so much better between Deshaun, between Kirby, the DBs. Like, they're kind of on the same page right now.
Yes.
I think that, you know, a lot of that might have to do with, you know, Aubrey Pleasant. Like, that was one thing they kept mentioning, right? Like, the communication needs to be better. We need to be on the same page. And now they're all saying the communication is better. We're on the same page.
Yeah, something worked. Yeah.
Yeah, something clicked, something worked. So I think they feel more confident about the back half. Not that Cousins was exactly lighting things up that game, but, you know, I think those late game situations, like, that was a tough spot for them in that game, and I feel like they'll be more prepared for it this time around. So when you're looking at the defense, like, yeah, a lot has changed. Mm-hmm. They've gotten some pieces. Jerry didn't play in that game, as you mentioned. Now he's back. He's kind of solidified that CB2 spot. You know, Jeff is still Jeff. So they've got some pieces around that might be, you know, that might be better equipped to handle this Vikings offense. You might still have your issues against a guy like Justin Jefferson.
Right.
Who doesn't, right? So
100%.
And you can contain him or do what, you know, let him do his thing and then you bottle everything else. It might be a winning recipe if they can kind of figure some things out here.
And that'll be the difference is like, and if you get beat in a game by, you know, Justin Jefferson and Dalvin Cook just being dudes, like, okay. And if that's what happens, then that's what happens. But, you know, that's not what happened the first time. You know what I mean? And I think that that's what Campbell is saying because they were, you know, defensively, like you just said, Colton, they were due every week with or without Tracy. A horrible, what the hell was that? Like, why did you just let up a 70-yard play? What's going on? Like, now they're not. Like, if they're getting beat, Campbell calls it, I've always called it the long way. Campbell calls it the long, hard way. Like, make them take the long road, the longest way possible. Make them run. If they want to run on first down, make them go 3.5 every single time, okay? Like, if they're going to beat you, make their talent actually work for it. That's what they do on defense now. It's not anything different. It's not anything special or crazy. They're giving themselves little tweaks here and there. They're giving themselves a little bit more room for error. And then they're just hanging on. Like, I think that that's been the biggest difference, and that's what we've seen the change. And I am curious. How do you play a team that kind of beats you on its fundamental? Because that's what Minnesota does. Cousins is, when he's right, a really fundamentally sound. He makes good decisions with the ball. The offense works for what he can do. Dalvin is awesome. Jefferson is impossible to cover. And the defense does what it's supposed to do. And they're hard to beat. If you can beat a team that's hard to beat, then we've seen more graduation here. And I think that that's what you're looking for. No gimmies. Play them even. Play them straight. See what happens. And, you know, sometimes you lose the Bills game. You know, I mean, did they give him any gimmies in that game? Maybe. But, like, if we look back at that game, I feel like you just got beat by a team that's better. And if that's all that happens at this point, okay. But that's all it can be now when we go forward and you look at these games. And I think that's probably the difference. It's hard to explain that or, like, see it. But I think you kind of know, what I mean, when you see it on the field.
Yeah, for sure. Another thing I thought was just important to note from this Vikings game is that, at least the one in September, I should say, that the Lions weren't entirely healthy. I know we mentioned
at
Tracy,
all.
But also St. Brown, I think,
that's
was
what
a
I was gonna
banged
say.
Up. He was in and out. Swift only had, like, 8 touches or something in that game. Not a lot. Mm-hmm. I think
the line was
dealing
also
with the ankle stuff and shoulder injury. So that was not, it wasn't a situation like now where all the kids are healthy. And
I think Frank was even a little banged up at that point too, right?
Yeah. They had some offensive line stuff that they were dealing with too. So, I mean, they're healthier now. Like, they got their horses. Like,
that's The horse.
Very small.
speaking of the horses, and we mentioned before the break there, St. Brown, and I know you have some stats and some numbers, and there's a lot with him across the board because it's just, and I wrote about it this week, like the biggest thing that they have offensively for them, he's their best player, I think. He's their most valuable player, we'll say, right? Like that's what most you said valuable. It. Like Panay or Frank are the guys that I would call their best players, but you know, they are a difficult team to deal with when he's on the field. It's not just, he's the guy like it used to be. And that was the difference last year. He's the guy they trust the most. He was a guy that's not going to drop the ball. He's a guy that's going to run the right route. Right. Like that's what it was. And now it's become like when he's on the field on third and medium, they are a problem. Because what the hell are you going to do? They will run the ball and they'll run it out of anything. Or if you want to play, you know, whatever, if you want to load the blocks, play man. I mean, he is hard to cover in these spots, in these moments, a really good football player in all areas. Like that's Amon-Ra St. Brown. I tell you all the time, Colton, to me, he's the definition of a professional athlete. He is like good at everything, which makes him a great player, in my opinion. Yes. And I think he's the example of that. What are some of these numbers that you found here?
Yeah. Well, I want to give credit to one of our stats guys, Aaron
Absolutely,
Reese,
yeah.
for sending great. This to me. Because these are awesome stats and it kind of paints the picture for you. So First up, when St. Brown has played more than 50% of the Lions snaps, which were weeks 1-3 and 8-13, Detroit has averaged 2.7 points per drive and converted 44.7% of third downs.
Which is good.
Over the course of the full season, that third down conversion rate would rank 7th in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And the points per drive would rank second. So second best offense in the league.
When he's on the
field. Plays more than 50% of the snaps. The next one, when St. Brown didn't play more than 50% of the snaps, weeks 5 and 7, Detroit averaged 0.29 points per drive.
Man.
And converted 33.3% of third downs. Over the course of that whole season, the third down conversion rate would rank 29th in the NFL. And the points per drive would rank dead last. A few more. St. Brown's 21st down receptions on third and fourth down ties Justin Jefferson for the league lead. St. Brown leads the league in first downs per third and fourth down route.
That's my favorite.
13.2%. And then the last two, Jared Goff with Amon-Ra St. Brown on the field. his EPA per dropback, which is basically expected points added in efficiency stat, that would rank 4th in the NFL. 4th of all qualified quarterbacks. Jared Goff is the 4th best quarterback in the NFL.
When he's on the field.
Brown is on the field. When Amon-Ra St. Brown is not on the field, he is the 30th out of 32 quarterbacks. That just tells you everything you need to know right there. Get on Goff because he's been
good this year. Yeah.
But that just shows you the impact of Amon-Ra St. Brown. Mm-hmm. When he's healthy, when he's on the field, just what he provides his offense, the kind of the safety net, like just what he does for Jared Goff, just knowing where he's going to be. You need a third down and 7. You need a first down. You throw it to him. He's going to be open. He's going to find a way to make it happen for you. And that's what we've seen this year. And those numbers back it up and then some. It's kind of absurd when I was.
It really is, and it actually gets more absurd when you think about it because some of that is a little with a lot of guys in that case. It would be very skewed because you'd say, well, they run the offense for him. Like he's the focal point of the offense, right? He's like the guy, if we just took a name off those stats and we said, who is this player we're talking about? You'd be like, well, it's like Calvin Johnson or Randy Moss or something like this. They're running the offense for him. And to a degree, that's true. Like the Lions are running stuff on third down for St. Brown and they're doing a lot for him. But like also to a degree, it's not true. Like to a degree that he just does something good every play, whether it's for him or not for him. He's always there. Like you said, Colton, like, and it's even down to, you know, they're not afraid to take him off the field when they want to run the ball on third down because they know he'll block. They know that if they want to motion him across the formation and say, we want you to pick up an end here, he'll do it. Or go hit a linebacker, he will do it. And like that's the difference when we get into the efficiency numbers, not just for Goff, but for the whole offense. Because everything improves when he's on the field. You see it.
Yeah.
In those games this season when he wasn't. I think actually the Minnesota game or the Dallas game, there was one where he made like 3 catches in a row and he wasn't right. He was hurt. And he got up and it looked like he was going to puke like on the field. And they were like, oh God, I guess we got to take you out. And he's like, shit. And then they just fell apart. Like everything after that, yeah. just like the drive just collapsed. And it's like, oh my God, like this guy's so valuable in so many understated ways. And that yes. is, I think, the greatness of Amon-Ra St. Brown. And that's why he's like perfect for everything they do.
He really is. And yeah. and again, he's not the biggest, he's not the fastest, but he's a football player. I think that's probably the easiest way to say it. But like God. He's a perfect Dan Campbell guy. He's tough as shit. You see him catch that ball over the middle in the Jaguars
game.
Oh,
God.
Got the wind knocked out of him a little bit and then just popped back up like seconds later and ran off the field and was back in the game like two plays after that.
The one that he bobbled and caught is that one
was absurd. I still don't know how he made that catch.
And
that
then crazy. We were like, it's going to, who tweeted that? That they were like, it's going to come out later that that's actually a route that he practices or whatever. That he catches like 80 times off the jugs. He has somebody bobble it for him. Which is that's probably not wrong, but I don't know, man. It's an interesting group here at this point. And, you know, offensively, I think that's the number one thing that's carried them through. The defense has fixed a lot of their issues. And when you look back at that game against Minnesota, that was part of the problem. But offensively, too, like you mentioned, the line was still a little – I think some guys were overcoming some things. I think that was either the game where – St. Brown got hurt or had been hurt going in. So I think he played, but it was like he probably shouldn't have been playing.
He was not 100%.
Yeah.
I think he sprained his ankle or something in that game.
One of those. Like there was a couple games in there where it was like he was on the field where you were like, hey, he probably shouldn't be out there. But if he wasn't, they would not be able to move the ball. So he has to be. But now, TJ's not there. He's on the other side.
We haven't brought up old friend TJ Hockenson.
Okay. That's actually a good segue. Let's talk about TJ for a second because it's a good time to bring up what also he's done, and I have his sheet here open because I think he's played pretty well since he's been over there. He's got what does he have on the season? I've got the wrong sheet up, but I think he has produced, right, Colton? He's been what they've wanted from him. He's fit their offense, and I think he fits what they want to do better than what the Lions want to do. And I think that's why when I look back at the trade now, even at the time, I feel like it was like, I like the trade for both teams. I like what TJ can do in a, it's not totally vanilla, but a vanilla-ish run game that is all about setting up play action because that's his whole game. That's what he's about. But you take him out of the Lions picture and we've seen all the different things now that the Lions have been able to do. We've seen different formations that they've been able to rely more on. We've seen James Mitchell. We've seen Zylstra. We've seen Brock Wright. We've seen those reps go to other guys. It's really, it's helped, has it not? I mean, it's definitely helped. They have been able to, and Jared Goff, I think, is a big part of that. We'll talk about that in a second. But the Lions without TJ Hockenson has been probably what they hoped it would be. And it's not a cut to TJ. It's not a diss on him. I don't think anybody dislikes him or disliked him. I don't think he was anybody's best friend either. I don't want to get that twisted. But like, that's why I think it worked for both sides. That's why I think nobody here was worried about trading in division. You know what I mean?
When you look at it. I mean, when they made that trade, to me, it's like if that was the best offer on the table, you get some draft assets and improve your capital.
Yep. And it helps him too. Yeah.
10 times out of 10. Like I feel like we're so obsessed with like these win-win trades. And I even saw this on Twitter yesterday talking about the Stafford-Goff tweet. People are saying now Goff is better than Stafford. I'm just like, get out of here, man. Like,
Jesus Christ.
We live in a society now where everything has to be, oh, well, who's a clear winner on this? It doesn't have to be that way. Like, it can work out for both teams. The Lions got what they wanted out of that trade. Now they have all these assets they can work with. They can move around. They can trade up, trade down, whatever they want to do. The Vikings got another piece for their offense for a team that's trying to make a deep playoff run.
Yeah.
Irv Smith got hurt. Mm-hmm. They needed a tight end, and they made a move for one of the better receiving tight ends in the game. And you're seeing what he's doing on the field. Like, he seems like he's already got a good relationship with Cousins.
It's a good fit.
Perfect fit in that offense, right? And it's fine. Like, it doesn't have to be we should have re-signed him if he's playing like that.
Right.
Because he would not have had that same impact on this offense and what the Lions want to do. And what I've seen since then, I think it might have been the first game after that trade or maybe the game in between there. But, they had three tight ends working. They had Zylstra, they had Mitchell, and they had Brock Wright all doing their things. Like, Mitchell caught a touchdown. A week later, Brock Wright did his thing. Like, they're all involved. They're all involved in the running game with their blocking. I thought Zylstra this past week had a really good blocking game against the Jaguars. I thought he was really involved there. And I like that they're using these guys in different ways. They're just throwing them at you and saying,
100%.
This guy can give us this. This guy can give us that. And it's not so dependent on just one guy and saying, all right, TJ, like go out, do your thing. Because defenses know what TJ Hockenson is going to do to you and what he gives you. But now you could throw three different guys at you with different skill sets. I think that's pretty cool. And I think it's pretty versatile. And, you know, who knows? They still might draft another tight end to add to that mix.
I think they will.
So you've got some options, you know? So.
And I don't, I think that sometimes I always feel bad when I write like about TJ because it's like, you know, I write like when he's not there, you don't have to worry about his targets. You don't have to worry about getting him touches. And people sometimes I think take that as like, well, what does that mean? He was selfish. He was in there demanding the ball all the time. And it's like, well, no, but he is a good, talented, like you said, Colton, he's one of the better route running, you know, for his size tight ends in the league. You owe it to him to get him targets and get him the ball. Like you owe it to, if he's going to be on your team and you're going to pay him all this money, like you
especially
owe it.
When you draft him eighth overall.
Right.
Too,
you owe it to everybody around you to have him as a focal point of what you're doing. And people don't look at, now we've changed as a football watcher community, we'll say, where we just look at players. We don't look at their situations. We don't look at the team. We don't look at what's around them. We don't look at, you know, how this guy blocks compared to how that, you know, we don't look at that. We just look at like, what's his actual value right here and now in a vacuum, like you were saying.
Yep.
And when you get rid of all that and just look at like the actual fit and you take a good player who doesn't necessarily fit an offense anymore and you move him out of it, it opens up everything for a lot of other not as good but potentially good players who will give you more in run blocking, who will allow you to do different stuff with run blocking and not be afraid to do it. Like, I'm sorry, that's when they ask TJ Hockenson, who's trying to get paid, whatever he's trying to get paid, to run across the line and give his body to a 290-pound edge with no care in the, I don't know how hard he's going to do. Brock Wright's going to do it. Okay. Zylstra's going to do it. And so is Mitchell. Because they don't
have
a choice.
These guys are hungry. They have to. Yeah.
Like, and I don't want that to come across that like that's a slight to TJ. Because it shouldn't be. And he's a good, you know, and I think that I've even come over the years of looking at him. Like, I still think he should be a better run blocker than he is. But I understand why he's not. Because the way he's going to make his money is exactly what he's doing right now. He's not on the team anymore. He doesn't really fit what they did. They didn't draft him. It's a great trade. I think that when we look back at it, too many people were way too quick to just say, the Vikings fleeced the Lions
way
here.
Way too quick.
And it's like, Jesus, guys, like you've got to stop with these immediate. That has actually become just as bad as the draft grades, the immediate draft grades, where you're like, how are you supposed to draft grade? Like, we've never seen him play. Like, what's
the hell?
He's
been on the team for 20 seconds.
20
he hasn't
minutes.
Even signed his contract yet.
Yeah, but you're right. The immediate trade grade, this is a great example because if I think we look back at it now, you'd say like, man, this really worked out for both sides. I think TJ is playing well. He fits what they want to do. Maybe they re-sign him. I don't know. Like, that could be a situation there where we're willing to give up the second rounder because we think he fits what we want to do long term really well. And that could be the case. And it might be something where you just say this in even 5-10 years down the road, we say this is a great trade. Maybe not. Maybe TJ's a Hall of Famer and the Lions really screwed themselves. But at the time, you get it, right?
For where they are right now as a franchise, it didn't make sense to sign him to like,
no,
you know,
never.
4-year,
no.
$60 million contract. Like, that's not where their best resources should be spent.
Right.
This frees up $9.5 million for next year, even so they can use that money to target other players that can help them in other ways. So I thought it was a win-win. You get some extra money, you get some draft capital, and TJ gets to be in an offense where they're planning on using him the way that he probably should be used.
And I'd be fascinated. I'm sure some guys will go over there and talk to him after the game. But I'd be fascinated to know his real like when he left. He was like they were 1-5, 1-4. Whatever it was, they're bad, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't talk shit, I wouldn't say, but he didn't not. He did that TJ thing where he's like, I didn't really want to be there anyway, kind of thing, where he was like, I knew I was going to get traded, and like, I'm just glad to not be on a crap team. It had that air to it, you know what I mean?
I missed that, but I believe it, yeah.
So I don't know. I would be very fascinated to see, but it also could have just been bullshit, because it's TJ and he just was talking.
I just like how he tweeted, he's happy to be back in the Midwest. And I'm like, bro, you were in the Midwest.
Well, that is really a TJ thing to say, if nothing else. And that's probably like the most genuine. He didn't, you know, whatever. I thought the Detroit's the North, right? I don't understand. Yeah. But in any event, yeah, I think that was a good trade. I think it's worked out well. I hope TJ doesn't get booed because he did give everything he had to the Lions when he was here. It wasn't his fault that he got drafted sixth overall. Wasn't his fault that any of that, you know, that Campbell, and he gave everything he had. And there were stretches early in 2021 where I was like, you know, because he dropped a lot of weight. And I, at first I remember being like, what is he doing? This is not going to work well because of all, but when he's healthy and he's right, like TJ has had flashes where it's like, okay, he's better than I thought as a route runner or a pass catcher or whatever. So, you know, I get it. I get it on all sides. I hope nobody has horrible ill will. I don't think they do. I don't sense that.
Yeah.
I think all parties have respect for one another. I think you'll see a lot of hugs and smiles and jersey trading there probably after the game, I would assume.
Yeah.
I don't know if Campbell and TJ, maybe they will. Who knows? I think that it's all good there, but yeah, I don't know. We got anything else here on the Lions Vikings for right out?
Nah, should be a good game. I'm excited for it.
Yes, should be a good game indeed. We'll be there to check it out. And obviously next week we'll be back here to break it all down. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. For Colton, I'm Nick. Be good to each other, and we'll talk to you later.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.